Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, my very special guest is Brenda Miller. She is a candidate for the Grossmont Healthcare District Board of Directors in Zone 3, District 3. She's a nurse with both master's and PhD degrees in nursing and over 40 years of healthcare experience, ranging from hospitals to hospice care. Currently, she's a hospital administrative supervisor at Palomar Healthcare and a nursing program instructor at Cal State San Marcos. She is a big advocate for nurse advocates in the healthcare system, and she says nurse leaders need to sit at the table where healthcare decisions are made. So, Nurse Miller, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Miriam. I appreciate the time.
It is a pleasure. Now, we should say that the Grossmont Healthcare District encompasses about 750 square miles. Can you tell us about District 3, what that includes?
District 3 includes most of the La Mesa area. Mm-hmm. It's kind of gerrymandered through Del Cerro along College Boulevard as far as Chorus Lake.
Can you tell us why you're running and some of your most relevant qualifications and experience?
Why don't we start with my qualification? I started off as a young nurse. I had no other career I thought of in my mind as far as what I wanted to pursue. And so when I approached my mother at 15 and I said I wanted to be a nurse, she said, well, let's look at being a candy striper first. And a candy striper in those days were actually unpaid certified nurse's aides. We did everything the nurse's aides did. But again, a person interested in nursing, we were given a little more extra attention by the registered nurses, and we're able to watch other procedures. And then I advanced, and I was accepted into associate degree nursing. And part of my experience there was initially I experienced racism. I was told that an RN should be only a white or Caucasian lady, and LVN should be, people of color.
Awful.
Yeah. And it was really tough at first. And this particular instructor wanted me out of the program since I wouldn't just step aside and be and go to an LVN program. So she did a lot of unfortunate things to a point where I finally reported her to the president, and I was eventually reassigned and was able to excel in the ADN program. And my love and passion was not to stop with my AD program. And when I moved to Los Angeles, I was accepted at UCLA School of Nursing and pursued my Bachelor of Science of Nursing. And then I enjoyed nursing over the years. And then I eventually realized things were changing here. And why are things changing so rapidly? And then I decided to go back and get my master's. And so much had changed that it was an incentive for me to pursue my PhD in nursing.
And congratulations on that. That's quite an accomplishment. What compelled you to run for office, this particular office on the healthcare board?
That leads me up to where I am today. Being a nurse for over 40 years, I teach leadership and management and professional issues at Cal State San Marcos. And in teaching, I'm teaching the students, you need to step up to the plate. They're young nurses, and I share with them, when you're asked to move into a leadership role, you won't know all the ins and outs of it. And as I'm teaching this since 2014, I finally hit that fork in the road and said, I should lead by example. So that's why I decided, okay, well, I'm going to seek and see what's out there. And this position came up in 2022, but it wasn't in my zone 3, which is the area I'm in. It was my area, and it was time for me to step up to the plate and as a nurse leader and lead by example. And then I looked at the position, as far as Grossmont Healthcare District and nurses being advocates, the most important thing that we're advocating for is that nurses should shape the policies that impact our lives, but also our patient and families' lives as well.
We all know how important it is, to have a good nurse advocate on your side. And having gone through that with, parents in the hospice system and or hospitalized, it's just so important to have caring people there. So you have brought to my attention some really troubling statistics. According to the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, 100,000 nurses left the workforce during the pandemic. And by 2027, almost 900,000, that's about a fifth of all of the registered nurses in the nation, intend to leave the workforce, either, retirement or other reasons, threatening the national healthcare system if we don't find some solutions to that. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that over 200,000 new registered nurses are needed, new positions to be created each year through 2031 if we're not to face a severe shortage. So it begs the question of, I guess, two part, why are so many nurses leaving? And what are your ideas to address the nursing shortage so we won't face that here?
I want to say COVID really was the pivotal point of nurses leaving the profession. A lot of things happened during COVID. Let me just take a step back to what's called the Institute of Medicine. It's called To Err is Human. And in that report, it emphasizes that we need to make change. And in the process of making change, we have to create a healthier work environment for all in the healthcare system. And so, as I had mentioned earlier, when I was before I went back to get my master's, those changes were occurring. There were things like DRG that was coming in. There were things that were changing that we couldn't use certain abbreviation. Things were changing with the way medications were delivered to the patient so that we would reduce errors. And in the process of making those changes, what we really found was, so that's 1999 when that report was written. By 2020, when COVID hit, nurses and healthcare professionals did not have the equipment that they needed to protect themselves. And that raised a big, big red flag that no matter how much we have tried to change since the report, to err is human, meaning let's reduce those errors. We've got to reduce errors. We found we were not there yet. And COVID really hit home. A lot of health professionals lost their lives. There was a picture that still remains in my mind in New York when nurses were using trash bags to protect themselves from COVID. And it was a major concern. So a lot of nurses left nursing and other health professionals. They left to look at, as far as in the acute care, they moved from the acute care to other areas.
Well, it was also mentally stressful dealing with, in the early days of the pandemic, especially I would imagine when you're hooking people up to ventilators, only a small percentage of those folks would survive by the time they reached that point. It was very dangerous. You were worried about contracting the disease yourself or passing it along to family members. And then you had the people who would probably come in and argue because they didn't want to wear a mask or maybe were concerned they couldn't see their relatives. It had to be just the most stressful possible environment for these nurses who were really true healthcare heroes. They're risking their lives to save others.
Miriam, what was even worse was the ethics that were involved, who's going to live and who's not going to live. Also, the ethics that a patient would die and you would real essentially move that patient out of the bed because you had a backlog of patients waiting for beds. And nurses didn't have an opportunity to mourn, they didn't have an opportunity to process the loss. And it became very, very emotional. A cycle for the nurses cycling through patients that
Imagine.
were dying within 24 hours. I experienced a young man who was, watching his phone and playing and talking, and within 24 hours he was on a ventilator. Within 48 hours he was dead, and he was like only 18 years old. So,
Heartbreaking. So,
life didn't stop for us. So it
no.
moved on, and so that was the COVID. But also there was the baby boomers, the year of like 1945, 46 to 64. We're aging. We're moving from the work environment to the healthcare system as patients. And so that too is leading to
So
the
just a lot of them are aging out. At the very time, we're seeing more aging patients coming in. And so clearly we need to get more nurses trained. How do we do that? What are your ideas specifically as somebody who's been not only a nurse, but a nurse educator, a teacher?
Well, one thing that I'm pushing for, and there's certainly laws that are being enacted, staffing ratios, because nurses, when there's a ratio in place, meaning that I'm a med-surg nurse and I have up to a maximum of five nurses. If I'm a telemetry nurse, maximum of four. If I'm an ICU nurse, maximum two. Well, you don't have safe staffing ratios. And I worked before safe staffing ratios were in place. And when you have 12 to, 15 patients, that is an unsafe environment.
Yeah.
That leads to burnout. That leads to unsafe work environment and nurse fatigue, and the patient outcomes are affected. So I'm pushing that the law should be nationwide, safe staffing ratios, that we need the laws to mandate safe nurse to patient ratio so we can have a better outcome for our
Yeah.
patients.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it's needed. How does that work though, if you have an emergency like a pandemic or something like that? Where all of a sudden you have this mass of patients coming in that would overwhelm a hospital. Would there be any give on those ratios? Or, what happens if a hospital's overwhelmed by something unexpected?
We did during COVID. They did petition the Board of Registered Nursing to increase the ratios in order to,
Just as a short term, yeah.
increase the a short term, but they decrease the backlog, the patients that were coming into the emergency room, because again, the emergency room can only handle so many.
Absolutely.
And one thing that is needed is how can we treat the patients? And that's what I'm looking at too. How can we treat the patients in their home before they become, before a crisis occurs? Then they have to get in the ambulance, then they come in, and then sometimes the emergency room bay where the ambulances are waiting to offload patients. You've got them not only holding the patients for maybe two and three, maybe even longer hours.
I was shocked to learn of this. You and I talked about this on the phone the other day. And then just today, someone was posting on my Nextdoor forum about having a really, really long wait in an ambulance bay and noting that all the other ambulances were waiting too because they couldn't admit them to the hospital. Apparently, staffing
Right.
issues. And I'm not sure if that was Grossmont or another, but
That's
it
all
begs the
hospitals.
question of why. Obviously, if an ambulance is sitting there for 3 hours waiting to offload a patient, it means that ambulance is not available to go help anybody else who might be in need. Do you know how big a problem that is, if any, at Grossmont Hospital, which, the healthcare district oversees? And what do we need to do so that we don't have those kind of delays? Is that an issue with the county or whatever entity is hiring those ambulances? Is it an issue with a hospital not having enough staffing, or a little bit of both?
Well, let me just step back and just share that it's a cumulative, okay? So how can we go upstream and address this? And one thing that has changed, the law changed that nurse practitioners can work to their fullest extent. There's again an Institute of Medicine report called Future of Nursing. And in that report, it says that nurses should function to their fullest extent. And what better person? There's two tiers that they're going through, and the one tier, the nurses should be able to function independently by 2025. What better place can we put those nurse practitioners than in the rural community? So we put them in the rural
Good idea.
community when and have like satellites, or even in the underserved community where you could have mobile vans where they can make rounds. People in the community will know that they are there in the community. So when they start having some signs of like congestive heart failure, they have the blood vital signs change.
You get them before they have the stroke or the heart attack and
Before
suddenly a life or death.
actually before the crisis, they move into a crisis, then they have to call the ambulance, and then you get into the backlog. But
Right.
if they start having those symptoms, then they can If a nurse is in that community, she can mobilize, go out, see and treat that patient, and hopefully reduce that crisis and reduce that transfer to the
And
hospital.
it's probably less costly for the patient as well,
Oh,
because we all know how high emergency medicine can be. That was going to be one of my questions, was you talked about equity, your ideas for improving access for underserved communities like our rural areas, as well as folks that are uninsured. Maybe you already answered it, but I'll ask it anyway to see if there's something that you wanted to elaborate on.
I wanted to just share also telemedicine. It's been around. Would you believe I dates myself? I remember when they were putting in putting in, they were actually TVs into homes that the doctors and other health professionals could see the patient.
Well,
That's
we all did it during COVID. I mean,
and became very popular.
as it did.
But what that is serves a wonderful purpose, but you need to lay eyes on that person. You need to have a person that's able to go there to the home, because sometimes you've got transportation. Their children are at work and they're the ones that can take them, and they have to arrange ahead of time to take off. You get a doctor's appointment that the doctor says, because people, they lack the ability to describe their situation, and they may get an appointment like next week.
Yeah, or you may spot something the patient didn't even realize was a problem, that they're calling you out about one problem and you notice the ankles are all swollen and you realize this could be congestive heart failure, right?
There's more to it.
Yeah.
What better way, if you had a hub that's in a rural community or underserved community, they have telemonitoring, but they also can mobilize the nurse timely to see that patient. That's, I think, it's a wonderful way moving forward to utilize our nurse practitioners.
Excellent idea. I'd ask too about, we mentioned COVID earlier, but we've certainly seen in some areas, pushback even against things like vaccine mandates or vaccine requirements and masking mandates, even for healthcare workers, not necessarily, the general population. But I just wanted to ask you about how good a job you felt the healthcare district did with how it handled the COVID crisis and whether you, in general, support those sorts of protections for healthcare workers so they can feel safe on the job. What do you think that should be a personal choice?
I support vaccine 100%. There is the study that was done, I believe, in the 50s, and it was turned out to be a false re research or study, and it linked vaccines to autism, which caused
Awesome.
right now this division between either you're for or you're against vaccines. And you're not going to change people. And let me go back to the hospital when just the flu, the hospital's mandated you have to take a flu shot. And you had those nurses that stood up and said, I will not take it. And then that's when the hospitals would say, well, you have to wear a mask for the flu season. Fast forward, here, COVID hit, we all are wearing masks.
Yeah, exactly.
So
Exactly.
vaccine, unfortunately, is going to remain a personal choice, no matter how much we want to educate the public and try to get them vaccinated. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So we do encourage wearing masks. Some of us at the hospital still wear masks because we know that, you walk into a hospital or in a healthcare system, you don't know who's sick, and they may not be aware that they're sick.
Yeah. Your website mentioned transparency and oversight as among your goals if you are elected. Do you have any specific examples, or how do you think the district has been doing in those areas?
Well, I've been attending the Grossmont Healthcare District bi-monthly meetings.
Good way to learn. I'm always surprised how many candidates run for office and don't bother to attend the meetings for the office they're running for. So that's good that you're doing that.
It gives me an o oversight. I feel that there's a transparency that already exists with the board, and I certainly would advocate that we remain transparent to the community, because it's the community is who we're working for. We're, helping to improve the community. And so they should be well informed.
Absolutely. You are, we should mention, one of three candidates so far who has declared to run in this race. And I think the filing deadline opens in July and closes in what, somewhere in August. So there may yet be more. We're committed to invite all of them to be interviewed. You're running so far against Michael Emerson, the incumbent, who's an optometrist, and Nadia Farjood, an attorney. This is a nonpartisan race, but there are two Democrats, you're one of them, and a Republican. I wanted to ask you what you view as the key points of difference between you and your two opponents.
Well, let me start off with Dr. Emerson. He's been there since 2006, I believe. I think as far as experience goes, from his point of view, he certainly has the experience that a board member needs. He's been, I believe, also on the Sharp board. So he brings a wealth of knowledge. And I think that only thing missing is being able to speak for the healthcare system. He's has educated himself.
Right. You're saying because he hasn't actually worked in a hospital setting, he's an optometrist, working in an optometry office. That's a different type of experience than what you would bring to the
It's
table.
a different type of patients, right, that you are experiencing. Because when patients go into the hospital, when they're out in their homes, you're addressing healthcare needs. As I used to say when I would do home care, there were three things that would happen when you go to a home. You'd go to a home, knock on the door, and have the visit and move on. You go to the door, and the person is having a crisis, and you have to address that crisis. And it was wonderful, very, and the doctors were very supportive because we had the backline phone number, so we could get to the doctor and talk to them and move forward with whatever is necessary to help that person in the crisis. And then the third is that you knock on the door and someone's saying he's down in the bathroom, and you're calling 911. You're doing a quick assessment and you're doing 911.
And how about your other opponent in the race? I don't know if you have any key differences in terms of the experience or positions with Nadia Farjood, the attorney.
She's a graduate, I believe, from Yale University, and she's young. I believe 1 year where she clerked, I believe, with a judge, and then maybe a year and a half as a junior attorney in a law firm in Los Angeles. She didn't lead any of the cases. She lacks the experience, and as far as how the healthcare system runs, the needs of the patients.
Hands-on nursing experience, that you bring to the table, years and years of it. I do want to address one point. One of your opponents had, by Ms. Farjood, filed a complaint with the Fair Political Practices Commission, claiming that she thought you had violated campaign laws by campaigning from the workplace. We do have a letter now from the FPPC concluding they did not find any evidence of any campaign finance law violation, but I just wanted to give you a shout out here if you want to offer any further comment or explanation on that.
First of all, I'm very disappointed that this tactic is being used to smear me with, articles and making assumptions that the violations occurred and that I am under investigation. I'm really disappointed that this is a tactic to get me out of the race, because when someone's less qualified, I guess unfortunately they have to take other measures to eliminate an opponent, and that shouldn't exist, that we all should, campaign on our own merits. And if she doesn't have the merits, then I think that attacking me and making false accusations about campaign violations, when she doesn't know the details, she has no idea why they decided that there's no investigation. But she continues to, and her followers continue to try to smear my name as a way to get me out of the campaign. They know that I'm very qualified, I'm very the right fit for the position. And if you can't stay in the fight for your own merits, it's wrong to smear somebody else.
Yeah, well, thank you for explaining that. What else would you like our readers to know about your candidacy and your goals if you are elected to the Grossmont Healthcare District Board of Directors for District 3, which oversees 750 square miles here across East County? It's pretty virtually all of East County, I think, is under this district, and the Grossmont Hospital, which is the only hospital serving the vast majority of East County.
Well, one thing that I really truly enjoy is that they do have that scholarship. program to bring healthcare, other healthcare people, not just nursing, but other healthcare professionals into the field. And one thing that I would like to, if I'm elected for the board, and I feel confident that I will be elected to the board, is one, not only the outreach to continue the scholarships, but also, you know, look at the middle-aged school students and help them to understand that in the healthcare world, there's many things, just as an RN, that you can do. You can go into public health nursing. You can go into primary nursing. You can go into home health. You can go into nursing homes. There's such an array that hospitals, when I first started, that was the only position that we felt, either that or a doctor's office, that we could go into. And so this is such a rich field that if they're educated, we can convince them, and we can hopefully, the goal is to get more into the healthcare field, and not only into the healthcare field, but to stay in the healthcare.
Yes, retention is just as important as recruitment.
So we have to improve workplace safety. There's laws already out there for the workplace violence, and the hospital environment is creating self-care. And so the law even mandates that you have to take your 15-minute breaks. And that's one thing that I was accused of, being at a meeting when...
if you made a call or an email on your break, they were trying to say
that. When I'm on my break,
that
they're making these false accusations. So I don't want to digress. But, you know, you have to take your 15-minute break. You have to take your 30-minute breaks. You have to take your 10-minute breaks. You have to take those. And that's because I was in the work world where the only time that we would eat was whatever food was sitting on the conference table, and we would eat that down and then go back out and take care of patients. That's not healthy environment. So we have to create those healthy environments. So we improve what's existing now, so that when we bring in new people, they don't leave, because there is a number of nurses that within a year's time, they've made change their mind about being a nurse, because this is not for the faint at heart.
Yeah. For our audience out there, if you tuned in late, we are speaking with Brenda Miller, a nurse who is running for the Grossmont Healthcare District Board of Directors in Zone 3. Brenda, I really want to thank you for joining us today and ask you, where can people learn more about you if they want to read more about your positions or get involved in your campaign? Where can they go?
I'm on the board at La Mesa Foothill Democratic Club. I go there, and I'm there the first Wednesday of the month. Mm-hmm. So I really would love to hear from the public. What are their needs?
And you have a website, I believe.
And I have a website, votenursemeller.com. And I'm on social media, and I add educational information on my Instagram site, my Facebook site, my Twitter site, and LinkedIn site. And so... I'm out there in the social world, digital world, as well as in person. And I also would like to start holding locations here in La Mesa to visit with the community and find out more of the needs of the community.
There you go. Well, I really want to thank you for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much, Miriam. I really appreciate you having me and allowing the time to just share about who I am.
You're welcome. It's such an important race, and we appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.